It is Friday, May 20th.
Of new music.
This program is supported in part by our community of contributing listeners. To become a contributing listener, visit kusp.org. Thank you. It is Friday, May 20th. 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. It's time now, of course, for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name is Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during our program are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on Geek Speak, after a spot of geek news, we're speaking about E3, the biggest gaming convention, and we're going to speak a little bit about the biggest geekiness ever, Star Wars. During the second half of the show, I'll welcome you to join our conversation. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Now, I want to make it clear that during the second half of the show, we'll take any questions you might throw at us. So if your hard drive's crashed recently and it's making a weird sound, well, you can give us a call and find out what that is. So again, the phone numbers during the second half of the show, I'll give that information out and you can join us. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks. Sean Cleveland, Senior PR Marketing Manager for NetCell. Drew Meyer, Storage Specialist at Adeptech. And here in the flesh is Master Dee Dee Hubbard. Last week at NYU, Dee Dee graduated from the Interactive Telecommunications Program with a master's degree. Kind of fitting for seeing Star Wars last night that now we get to call you Master. I appreciate that, Dee Dee.
I am the Master.
Thank you so much for being out here. Before we get into our conversation about Star Wars and about E3, which, Dee Dee, we're at all week, and E3 is the world's largest gaming convention, if you will. Happens in Los Angeles. Before we get into all that, let's do some geek news. And I'm going to start with Sean, sir.
Good news in abundance we have.
Oh, no. Don't start with the Yoda speak this early.
It was a little thick. So, yes, this week was E3, and we're doing an E3 show because Dee Dee was fortunate enough to attend.
Yay.
Bravo.
And she could still hear, which is amazing. Because if anyone's ever been to E3, they know that you walk from one booth to one booth, and it's like walking from 120 decibels to 110 decibels. Huh? And you go, oh, that's nice. So, some of the news this week, kind of interesting, in the hardware realm anyway, which I kind of am interested in. A startup called Aegea, located in Mountain View, California, they've announced a physics chip for games. This would be a separate chip that would be, put on video cards or add-in cards. And this physics chip would relieve a lot of the floating point, the really hard math that's used by the gaming chip that powers, you know, the video.
So it basically deals with gravity and acceleration.
A lot of that stuff, yeah. This takes the predictability out of video games and puts it into this chip to provide, like, more lifelike interactions. Hmm. So if you're firing a gun at a wall, let's say, usually nothing much happens except maybe, you know, you fire, like, 50 bullets and maybe you'll see a couple holes. You know, you're like, okay, that's not real. But with this chip, it could actually, you know, disintegrate the wall. Or they could show windswept hair or loose flowing clothing. A lot of things that video chips have problems now because they just don't have the kind of horsepower they need to drive this kind of physics.
So this chip be sitting on top of, on a gaming board? I mean, on a video board? Or would it be sitting on a motherboard?
I think they're trying to figure that thing out right now. Asus is coming out with an add-in card that'll have this chip.
Cool.
From what I can tell.
Very cool. Thank you very much,
Maybe
Sean.
By Christmas this year we might see this chip used in other places.
Great. Thank you. I'm going to go to Dee Dee.
Speaking of Christmas, if you happen to get an Apple laptop, maybe Christmas or sometime a little bit after, Apple is recalling more G4 batteries. They're recalling about 128,000 batteries, which were shipped on PowerBook G4s and iBook G4 laptops.
Wait, your battery recently died on your laptop, right? Is this
oh, fit? Yes, but that's much older. Oh,
okay.
Titanium PowerBook.
So basically they're saying, look, you got one of these computers, your battery's probably no good, and it's going to fail soon, so send it in, we'll give you another one?
It's only for certain runs of them. These batteries are manufactured by LG Chem in South Korea. So if you got your battery from them, you'll want to watch out for iBook G4s carrying the model number A1061 and serial numbers that run numerically from HQ441 to HQ507.
Oh, good. Now we all know everything about it. But real quick, how would somebody find this this release to find out if their laptop's affected?
Check Apple.com.
Cool. Thank you very much, Dee Dee. Drew, instead of taking a sip of that, why don't you tell us what's new on the
okay.
geek scene?
So, robots. So there's a new... Well, there's a U.S. company, some researchers have designed a simple robot that can make copies of itself from spare parts. Now, that sounds like, you know, a little guy with a wrench in a garage somewhere, but it's really not that fancy. But the concept is what's exciting to people. It's a cubic little gadget with some sensors on the side and some magnets. And the sensors and magnets allow it to analyze the situation and look around itself and find other similar like cubes and reassemble itself, break itself down, and put itself back together in different forms, so that if you're, for example, out exploring something in space or on a different planet and you have a failed part, you can use another part to replace your own self and on, reconfigure yourself on the fly. It's got enough intelligence built in that it can do this without any instructions from anyone else. So like in a little more than a minute, a simple 3-cube robot can make a copy of itself. So some people are saying, wow, this is very similar to life replicating itself, and other people are saying this is just clever intelligence and useful for the future of exploration in space. Nobody knows yet, but it's a pretty interesting idea.
So when I first heard about this, I was all excited because I'm imagining, you know, you got like a whole bunch of little tiny parts and the robot comes together and it builds itself. No, actually these parts are like half a robot.
So yeah, or
it's equivalent to like, hey, I've got legs of a robot and the body of a robot and I'm a robot, so I can make a new robot. Click, and it's done. So it's not as exciting to me as I first thought.
I think it's more exciting as a demonstration that a robotic system can adapt and repair itself remotely. So.
Yeah, definitely. And that's a part of it. And, of course, as more complexity comes in place, it might be able to do it from, like, raw materials. Thank you very much, Drew. We'll circle back to Mr. Cleveland. Sean, go for it.
Yeah, you know how we talked about organic light-emitting diode screens, OLEDs?
About 6 months ago,
Chris,
six
months ago or so, and, you know, this technology was going to come out in Palm PDA devices. There's no backlight required,
right.
So they
really
don't use much battery.
Really bright, full-color, small screens.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And they have a high contrast ratio because it's like liquid paper, in a way. That's the best way to describe it. So Samsung has devised a 40-inch OLED panel.
Nice and small.
That could leave television sets that measure a little more than an inch thick.
Nice. And they're bright.
Yeah.
And clear.
In fact, they're, they're 600 nits bright.
Yeah. Nits?
What's a nit?
I'm going to have to pick on that one.
I'll pick on you.
A nit is a measurement of light in candelas per meter square.
Okay, thank you.
And the contrast ratio, flat panels right now are like 400 to 600 to 1. This is 5,000 to 1.
Of the contrast. Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Crazy. Should be interesting to see.
Dee Dee. Thanks, Sean.
Wow, I see. Cool.
I don't know if any of you are out there in the Netflix, but Netflix scored a victory against Evil Empire Walmart. Walmart decided to opt out of the online DVD distribution that they tried to take Netflix on a little bit earlier, and actually conceded to them, saying that, you know, we're going to redirect our customers to you. So that's a big win for the independent companies.
Wow. Okay. So when you go into Walmart now, you'll be pushed at Netflix?
Yeah, so they're subscribers, which they're kind of, you know, they signed up for the service with Walmart, but they're redirecting them to Netflix with the Walmart price.
Cool. Thank you, Dee Dee. I've got a little news. I've been playing with Tiger for a few days now, the new operating system from Apple. I had a lot of friends that had bugs with mail. They kind of lost some mail. They had some trouble with email. There's a patch that came out yesterday. If you already have Tiger, definitely upgrade the patch. You can get the patch installed. But I'm feeling at this point, I don't have a big desire to recommend Tiger at this point. Dee Dee, what about you? Do you think somebody should get Tiger if they're itching?
At the current status of the OS as it is now, it's nice if you have stuff that you want to develop, you want to get up and going with Tiger right now. So if you're into, you know, tinkering and building applications and whatnot, then go for it. You don't need to wait for that. But if you're waiting for it to be stable, as stable as it was in Panther, I'd wait maybe another update or something.
Just keep listening to GeekSpeak. We'll tell you when we feel it's stable.
Wow, Didi, your Mac is devoid of things on your desktop. And that is the cleanest desktop I think I've ever seen.
I like clean desktop.
What does that imply about a person, right?
My workflow is clean.
Yeah.
She's borrowing a computer from somebody else.
Yeah. Implies it's not her computer.
Which is the reality. Drew, another news story before we get on to that.
This is a quickie, but it's interesting because it's kind of near and dear to home here. It looks like Grocklaw is reporting that the SEO group stated in an SEC filing yesterday, quote, in addition, regulators or others in the Linux market and some foreign regulators have initiated or in the future may initiate legal actions against us, all of which may negatively impact our operations and future operating performance. So some pundits are saying, boy, that sounds like an awful good way to excuse your low stock price, and maybe this whole thing is kind of a stock scam to get out of a hole that the SEO group found itself in. So maybe we believe that, maybe we don't, but whether or not it's true, who knows? Are they just backpedaling furiously to say, you know what, our stock price is going to drop because we haven't had any success with this lawsuit yet? Or maybe we planned the lawsuit to prevent our stock from ever being reflected poorly on? Who knows?
SEO, originally Santa Cruz operations, no longer in any way really related to Santa Cruz.
They have a development group in Scotts Valley.
That's true. Poor people. Basically, yeah. They turned into, instead of a software development firm or an operating system development firm, they turned into a lawsuit firm. They have some patents, and they wanted to protest, and they've been kind of suing everybody to try to get some money out of the open source market. And what you're saying basically is now they're saying our stock is low because none of our suits are working.
Yeah, and guess what? Our stock may continue to be low because we might get
other
involved
suits,
in more
yes.
legal action. Yeah.
Huh. Okay. Thank you very much for that. Every year, a wonderful gaming convention happens in Los Angeles. E3, which is Electronic, what is it?
Entertainment Expo?
Thank you.
Nice.
Electronic Entertainment
Expo. That would be Expo, wouldn't it?
No, I think they do that. I think they do E3 Expo. But, you know, somebody will Google it for us right now and get clear on it. A few years ago, Sean, you went to the convention, took a whole bunch of pictures. This year, Didi has graced us with her knowledge of the floor. And, Didi, what struck you most impressively? Tony Hawk's height or anything else?
He is tall and very thin, kind of pale.
He lives in a video game, right?
Actually, he has more color in the video game.
Oh, wow.
That's sad.
So I should get on the rant.
What was impressive? Did you get to see the new Zelda?
I got to see a video of the new Zelda and a two-hour line for the new Zelda. And I don't know. It's kind of reflected in my Flickr photo set if you wanted to check out.
You know, I'll put that up online pretty soon.
All the photos I took because I...
Yeah, all 240 of them.
I went a little camera crazy. So I was like, oh, I need to consume it all now because it'll be gone in a couple of days. But for me, E3 was about wandering around aimlessly and just being in awe of all of the hype. All the hype.
So would you say that the most impressive thing of E3 is hype?
If hype were currency, I'd be
rolling
rich.
In it. Huh?
Did you see anything that you went, wow, this is going to change something? This is going to change game here. This is going to change my life.
Not especially, but I know that I have many hours ahead of me of complete, total
wasted time.
wasted. No, well spent time at the temple
and
of Nintendo.
Hopefully money. Oh, really?
Once I discovered the Nintendo part of the floor, I was like, I was in heaven.
Now, why is that?
I'm in heaven.
Yeah, why do you like Nintendo?
I mean, everybody's talking about PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360, and you're talking about Nintendo.
My first love.
Oh, it's driven by nostalgia.
Like 20 years ago.
That's no rationale. Darn, we can't attack it.
20 years ago, Nintendo. I am a Nintendo loyalist, and so I went to the Shrine of Nintendo, and I basked in the glory of Zelda and Mario Baseball.
Did you experience the revolution?
Okay, Mario Baseball, you showed me this, and I didn't really put it together that, oh, right, of course Nintendo would have a sports game with the Mario characters, because when you think of Mario, you think, wow, that's that company that made, that's Nintendo,
Donkey
that's
Kong.
Right.
Yeah, Donkey Kong.
So they got big games like the Donkey Kong drum thing.
Donkey Konga 2.
Tell me about Donkey Konga 2.
They had this huge line of people trying out Donkey Konga 2, which I like the game because I'm a drummer, but none of these people had any rhythm whatsoever, so it was this loud noise that was just... I am surprised that I can hear today as well. But for me, the thing that I liked the best about the Nintendo booth was They had a new Game Boy coming out. It's for the uber fashionable. It's tiny. You can update the faceplate on it, so you can make it look any way you want. So it's highly customizable, which I like customizable, but I don't like tiny things with small screens. But anyway, they were attached to these, like, booth babes.
What's a booth babe?
Tell us what a booth babe is, Dee Dee.
A booth babe is a technical term for someone dressed in very casual attire.
You mean revealing by casual? Is that, or skimpy by casual?
And with bright smiles, who tries to tell you all about the game that they are attached to.
Which they know a lot about.
Of course.
So she was... There's this model basically on the floor, and she had all these holsters with these little tiny game devices in them.
It was like
and you
a
had
weird
to reach
Western.
Up and like not do a striptease dollar insert, but like a pull out of this holster.
Yeah, I was
or she
like,
hand them to you.
Oh, she. I was like, can you hand me?
I don't really know you, so I'm not gonna snatch at that.
I'm trying to take pictures of this and not get cleavage in the shot.
Wow.
That's sad.
A lot of value there, huh?
Sad wouldn't have gone through that effort.
They had more clothes on the Nintendo part of the floor, though.
All right, so what else? I mean, what about the Xbox and the new PlayStation? Did you see them? I mean, I know that Xbox went away from that whole QB look and went with something else. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Xbox. I knew I missed something.
What kind of New York correspondent are you?
There was a special section for the Xbox where you could go in and play some playable games that they had running on G5s, and you weren't allowed to take any pictures, so there are no pictures.
You know, I'm chatting with William Harms, who is the senior editor at PC Gamer magazine. He would just come back from E3, and he said it was obvious that PC games, the PC market is shrinking. Did you see that?
There was at some points I felt like the NVIDIA section was what enveloped all of PC gaming, and then there was a really small, another small ATI section. So it was like the graphics card manufacturers that
were the ones pushing the games.
Pushing PC gaming, and elsewhere, everywhere was like console.
No kidding.
Things like iToy for PlayStation had like a big section. Arcade games had like big sections, but you know, all PC gaming was sort of regulated to this really green corner that was NVIDIA.
Wow, that's really interesting. I wonder. E3 usually broken up into different halls, and they used to have a console hall, and then the main floor was, you know, PC games. So, were the console companies on the main floor in the big room this year?
Yeah, there like Nintendo and Sony were right next to each other, which I thought was kind of neat. But in the other room, Xbox had a large corner, and then there was the gaming companies themselves. They took up a lot of the main hall, the South Hall. And there seemed to be a lot of push towards casual gamers. They're really trying to go aim for casual gamers now.
And of course, there were a lot of casual gamers there.
Casual attire.
E3 is really designed to be a thing for press and
it's an industry show. You have to be part of the industry or press to get access to that show. It's not open to the public.
So what they're hoping for, of course, is that the people that participated will then go into their media of choice and broadcast the experience and all that. Kind of like what we're doing here today. But do you have anything excessively cool to talk about with E3? Something that kind of blew your mind? Or is it pretty much the same kind of thing, a little step closer to better games?
There are some good games on the horizon, and there are some bad games on the horizon. And
what do you see that was...
I've really been getting into more independent games, like or smaller games, rather. Like Katamari Damacy.
Yeah, that's, you were telling me a little bit about this last night.
It's a really cool game, and it's made by Namco. And it's simple concept.
And it's good for pretty much any player. It's not like it's not one of these blood games.
Right. I mean, like you can pick it up and go run with it pretty quickly.
Okay, describe it.
You are sort of like, you have to clean up the mess of the King of the Cosmos, and so.
I've been there.
Yeah. He's totally, like, you know, destroyed all the stars. And so you have to recreate the stars. And he gives you this thing called a Katamari. And so you take the Katamari and you start rolling it. And as you roll, things stick to it. So you start out at, like, a really micro level. You're, like, a centimeter high. And as you roll, you pick up dust bunnies and like little pieces of gum wrappers, and you keep getting bigger, and then after a while you can pick up like shoelaces, and then finally shoes.
And the entire time your ball that you're rolling is getting bigger?
It's getting bigger. You're still tiny. You're pushing it. It's kind of like a Sisyphus or whatever. And so you're pushing it, and like eventually you can pick up chairs, and then babies, and then, you know, people, buildings, and it's kind of cool. And another game that I really am getting into, simple concept as well, Alien Hominid.
Mm-hmm.
It's by... Oh, it's totally vacated bio? No. Anyway, I'll get back to that. Alien Hominid. It's your classic side-scroller, shoot-em-up action where, you know...
Like a plane kind of thing? Or like a guy with a gun kind of thing?
Yeah, you're an alien hominid, and you're trying to get your spaceship back because it's been stolen by the FBI, of course. And so you're just running around and shooting at them, and you can do cool things like jump on their heads and ride them like ponies and bite their heads off.
Sounds like a same formula that we've seen for years, but
it's done with like this really like the style. It looks really comic book, and it's fun, and it's light, and it's simple. It's like approachable, but it still attracts hardcore gamers because you know you can just keep pounding away at the levels. So it reaches the casual and the hardcore gamer in a way that I think is really interesting, and so. But E3, it really sold home to me that the gaming industry is really after casual gamers. And I think Nintendo in particular even made that part of their spiel about their next generation consoles.
Now, what about handhelds and cell phones? Do you see any gaming on those?
There were a lot of little mobile booths. And like there was even this one cell phone where there was a snowboard game going. And as you tilted the phone left and right, you controlled which way your snowboarder would lean, so you could sort of navigate down the mountain with the tilt sensor. And that was really neat.
And how about instant messaging? I think I saw an article recently about that being built into games, so you can chat with people while you're...
Yeah, Yahoo...
I mean, I know that feature's there, but go ahead.
Yahoo's trying to take gaming to a different level, because they're trying to work out wireless to PC or... Basically, they want it so that you can be able to play your friends anywhere they are. You know, Yahoo Poker or Yahoo, I don't know.
Oh, so you play their games.
Yeah, but they're also trying to develop more things besides just poker and backgammon and things like that. They had some weird side-scrollers going on at their extreme Yahoo booth.
Okay, we're going to take a jaunt away from E3. Didi, you're come online quite a bit from New York via the internet, and I appreciate that, but we don't get the full intent of you because, of course, we have a lacked voice and there's a little bit of delay and everything. So I wanted to ask you some questions about what's cool and hip right now online. First off, you shocked and surprised me and amazed me and kind of disappointed me that Google's not exactly the hippest thing for you right now as search engines go.
Well, as like someone who likes to hack around and play, you know, just play with technology, Yahoo's actually more developer-friendly. They give you more access to their baby, so to speak. Google's really protective.
What about finding stuff? If you want to find stuff, which one works better for you?
If you want to join into the popularity contest, how many people have linked to what, then you want to go to Google. Like, what's the most popular link for, you know, caramel popcorn? You look on it on Google. But if you want to know how to make caramel popcorn, maybe that's not the best place, because you'll just get, like, where to buy caramel popcorn. Yahoo might help you, you know, find places where you can, you know, make caramel popcorn.
But can't you just in the search string add the word make in Google and probably get a good hit? Or do you find that Yahoo normally has better rankings on the meaning of what you're asking for rather than the popularity?
Well, sometimes adding terms just makes it even worse. Like, I'm not trying to think of it.
You add the word make and all of a sudden Make Magazine shows up, for example.
But they don't talk about caramel popcorn.
Well, they might once, but they don't have the whole article on how to make it. Okay, so are you saying Google's not your search engine of choice?
Well, I'm also trying to, like, keep flexible because, you know, I've been kind of wary of, like, some of the new stuff that Google's doing because they seem to be trying to swat flies a lot lately. Like, they released this thing called Google Web Accelerator, which got a lot of negative feedback and... caused, you know, certain things to break. It broke some web applications and was sort of wreaking its own silent havoc. And then they pulled it and off all of a sudden. And they said it was because it was only a limited beta, and that the number of downloads had been reached. And at one point, sometime during this time, Google itself had DNS problems and was down.
Wow. So. Okay, so maybe the end-all be-all isn't Google. One other thing that I want to mention is you did take a whole bunch of pictures, like 400 pictures like that of E3. You can find them from geekspeak.org. Today's show has a link to Dee Dee's photos, photo blog, if you will, of E3, some cool stuff to see. We're linking over to Flickr, your Flickr account. Can you tell us a little bit about Flickr? And Flickr is FLICKR.com.
Flickr without the E.
Right.
So, yeah, Flickr. Everybody at ITP, the program I just graduated from, is Flickr obsessed. It's sort of like a way. I mean, over the last break, winter break, everybody was posting their pictures to Flickr and commenting on them, and you know, sort of keeping in touch through this. It's sort of social networking, like Friendster, on top of things like you might have heard of like OPhoto or Snapfish.
It's sharing photos.
Right, and you can also tag them up. Like, if I have a photo of the geeks, I can add a tag called geeks, and so then I can always go back and look at all the photos tagged with geeks. Or
yours or anyone's.
Sean, yeah.
And that's the thing, is the photos are really public unless you make them private. Okay, we'll get more into that as the discussion continues. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com.
Community members are invited to the Biofuel Community Conference and Car Show at UCSC. Learn how to make biofuel, convert your car, and discuss the future of biofuels. The event will be held Saturday and Sunday, May 21st and 22nd. For more info, please call 454-0343, and for a schedule of events, go to www.biofuel.coop, C-O-O-P.
This week in This American Life, even now when she talks about it, Deborah has a hard time understanding what got her and her kids to the point where the kids decided just to vanish, run away.
And I remember Amanda saying, "Mom, we don't want to hurt you."
A mom and her two kids try to reconstruct what went wrong, and other stories of parenting gone awry, this week on This American Life, Public Radio International.
Catch This American Life Sunday at 10 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
You are listening to Geek Speak. If you have questions or comments, the numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. This is very important. The show is open to any calls. Calls you want to talk about Star Wars, people who want to talk about E3 or games, or people that want to talk about the problems they have on their computer, the frustration they have, we may be able to help. The phone number is 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing internet services including DSL, spam filters, PHP, and MySQL. Now with nationwide access, information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. The geeks this morning are Sean Cleveland, Drew Meyer, and from New York, Dee Dee Hubbard. Join our conversations about online gaming, Star Wars, or, of course, your problems and troubles with computers, 476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. All right, let's get into Star Wars quickly. Last night, all of us participated in an experience of seeing Star Wars. Dee Dee, you're, what, 25 right now?
Yes.
So when do you remember first seeing a Star Wars movie?
I know that I was exposed to them when I was much younger, but I have a really rich memory of watching them with my parents when I was about 8 years old, and recording it from the television, and just really, really getting into the series. And after that, my fandom really took off from that, and it became like a bigger world for, you know, your imagination to go to. And it was sort of always something like, you know, you now had this thing that you were really passionate about that you could argue with other people who are passionate about their other irrational things, like Trekkers. And so you're like, no, Star Wars is better. Star Wars is better because the Jedi have this code, and they uphold the code, and they're so cool, and they have lightsabers.
Geek.
Empire Strikes Back.
No, your girlfriend is a Trekker, and so you guys have had arguments about which is better. I mean, from someone pretty close to you, right? So Now, you come out to California, see the last installment of Star Wars, Episode 3, last night, and are you ashamed to go home and debate Star Wars and Star Trek, or are you proud as a star person?
No!
Oh, no.
You had to ask the question. Now we all have to give an opinion.
You know what it comes down to?
You know,
I miss Han Solo.
Let's clarify one thing. We're not doing spoilers about the episode. A lot of people haven't seen the show. We're not going to talk about the emotions we had about the show.
Yeah.
But in any case, I want to go on to someone who's much older than you, Dee Dee. I think almost twice your age. Sean.
What?
Okay,
oh,
not.
Oh, man.
Sean, what was your experience first seeing Star Wars?
Let's see if his memory's good enough.
I did. I saw it in the theater when I
Please
was.
Please don't walk out of the room.
When I was 9 years old. And it was quite an experience back then. I mean, geez, that was probably. Before, you had Battlestar Galactica. There were some sci-fi shows, but this took it to a new level. I mean, that was it was big. And then Empire Strikes Back introduced some elements I wasn't aware of. You know, you could find out that your father was someone you didn't know, you know, and he was evil.
And whether we believed him or not, that was a big thing at school.
And then he had his hand cut off. Oh, my God, that was so traumatic for me. I don't know why, but I just remember it being traumatic, even though he got a new one.
Did it help define
but, you
your
know,
interest?
I think that world was very more real. Because it's just maybe because the film wasn't so great, the sets weren't so great.
Or you were 9 years old.
9 years old. I don't know. It just seemed more real.
Sean, you are an avid collector of science fiction novels, comics. If you look at your habits, they're very sci-fi. You're on a radio show that talks about technology every week. Did Star Wars help you do that? Is it part of the reason why you are who you are?
Yeah, I do. I collect genre fiction, and I think Star Wars probably played a big part in that. Although there are much better stories and books out there. So if Star Wars to you is you know the height of your science fiction, there are better. I recommend Alfred Bester, Stars My Destination, read some Robert Heinlein. There are a lot of good stories out
Moon
there.
Moon is a Heart's Mistress, great Heinlein. Okay, thank you, Sean.
Yeah.
Let's go with someone who does some collecting of Star Wars stuff. Drew, you've got a little bit of a collection of Star Wars stuff, and last night when we were finishing our heated debate about the movie on a street corner, you started quoting who people were in the first film. I'm a geek, but I'm not like a dedicated Star Wars, like know everything kind of thing. It sounds like from the first three movies, you are. Why do you know these random character names, people you see in the background of a scene kind of characters?
Wow. Thank you for the compliment, right? First off, my face is burning right now for those of you out in the world of radio. My brother, I got to give him tremendous credit. He and I, as children, would get up on Saturday mornings and build stuff out of Legos and then populate the worlds that we made with Star Wars characters. And we still have a tremendous collection of the figures, the figurines from Kenner, the original ones.
Those are great.
Lightsabers that shoot out of their hands and foot pegs that you can position and stuff. And so we actually took them all and put them into one of those. It's the kind of thing you put in your garage where it has little sliding drawers that have, you put different types of screws in.
An organizer.
Uh-huh. So we built a little label for every drawer on the organizer with each character's name, right? So then you knew exactly which one went where and you could pull it out and there was his gun and there was his cape and whatever else.
So when you think of Star Wars, you think of an organization chart with all these character names.
Yeah, a giant org chart, right? Little did I know that later in life, PowerPoint would make my org chart easier.
I think you're a nerd.
That sounds pretty nerdy, man.
You know, a lot of people read those books. I was shocked recently by an executive over the hill I was just talking with, and he knew a lot more about Star Wars than I did. He was telling me things I never even heard about, and it turns out he just reads the books as they come out.
Do you read those books?
I do not. In fact, I don't have the collection here with me. It's at my parents' house in Idaho still.
So as cool as the collection is and how much you know about the first three movies, last night when we're waiting in line, you go, yeah, I don't think I've seen episode two.
Yeah.
I was kind of horrified. I almost wanted to not give you a ticket.
What
are you talking about? How can you not go see it before this movie? But, you know,
it's not the same, you guys. I just got to say, there's something like Sean said, the quality of the film, the caliber of the dialogue, it wasn't. When I saw the episode one, which was the first of the prequels that came out, you know, and the whole Jar Jar thing, it was. And I was older and maybe just crustier and disillusioned with the world, but it just didn't grab me the same way as it did back in 1979 in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, in the Wilma Theater.
All right. I love that. So let's not be crusty and disillusioned. Let's help April out from Santa Cruz. What's the problem, April?
Well, I tuned in late, so I don't know what you guys, you know, were talking about at first, but...
Well, now we're talking about...
Now, well, Star Wars.
A little bit of grit to
them. Hey, I'm in my mid-50s. I've seen all the Star Wars. But listen, you mentioned one thing, that Google isn't your favorite search engine, and I didn't hear you mention another one. I just came in on the last sentence.
Yahoo.
What do you just use Yahoo?
Well, I personally still use Google. Dee Dee, our New York correspondent who's here in the house today, Yahoo.
Well, one of the lovely things about Firefox is the little search plugin window that a lot of people don't know that you can add different search engines to it. If you click on the little down arrow, you get in Firefox in that little search widget.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to, it'll take you to a site where you can add like dictionary.com,
Dogpile,
Wikipedia, Answers.com. I really like Answers.
Yeah, Google's frustrating. You know, Google is, it doesn't bring up a lot of stuff.
Right.
I know is there.
Yeah, Dee Dee was saying that Google is a popularity contest. That's their algorithm. It really is to find the popularity. So, yeah, using other search engines is a good thing to go.
Yeah,
I'm going to start using Yahoo more. And dictionary.com is a great one as well.
Which one?
Dictionary.com. I mean, that really is just a dictionary. But it's really wonderful to have a dictionary so quickly at your fingertips.
Answers.com is also really nice because it includes a dictionary, a thesaurus. It sucks stuff down from Wikipedia and also gives a little bit of its own background.
Wikipedia is a multi-user encyclopedia. Everybody adds content to it. It has a lot of definitions of popular terms that don't make into books yet, and also more information than you could possibly want about most subjects.
Yeah.
Okay, but April, you called not to talk about how search engines...
No, my screensaver, I used the star pattern thing, and it used to just, you know, the star pattern would come, and now it started getting kind of jerky, and now it's more sitting there than it is flowing, so it'll like stop, and then it'll jerk forward and stop, and then
a screensaver is pretty much it's set up to not take more bandwidth, more processor time than other things. It's kind of the lowest priority of execution, which means that if something else is taking a lot of power, a lot of processing power, the screensaver won't do as much. And that's probably what's happening to you.
So I've got a lot going on.
Are you in Windows 98?
I'm on Windows 2000.
Windows 2000. Well, yeah. I think that most likely, if you see the same problem, and just to do the simple test, quit all your applications, make sure everything's shut down, and then try it and see if the screensaver runs quickly. It's a telltale sign of whether your processor, when you think it is idle and when not doing anything, whether it's doing anything.
Well, I have so many protections on there, you know, for pop-ups and viruses, and I mean, I have an enormous amount. It's just protecting itself constantly.
Where did you get the systems that you have in
place? I have a guy that comes and cleans it up and helps me, and, you know, he's actually a geek.
I wouldn't be surprised if one of those applications has an error and has some kind of bug in it.
I'll ask him about that.
I would highly recommend. One thing you can do in 2000, you can see what processes are taking more time and more execution time.
Excellent.
Now, it's very possible you've got a process on there that's doing something specifically when the screensaver's on, like specifically when the machine's not active, you know, because you're not using it. It goes, oh, you know, the user's not using this, let's do something, like scan the machine or something of that nature.
Oh, so yeah, I have AdAware, and I go on there, and it says, oh, we've scanned for 3,400,000. It scans for stuff all the time. It's always making sure that nothing's getting in. It's cleaning it up constantly.
Right. Okay, so here's what I'd recommend. Go ahead and do Control-Alt-Delete. In Windows 2000, don't do this another... Well, you could do another ones too, but in Windows 2000, a dialog will show up, and a task manager, and one of the items will show processes, and they'll show percentages of how much processor time and memory...
I'm using.
Yeah, and you get a good feel, and if one of them's taking too much and you don't know what it is, go ahead and ask your geek, and he'll tell you what's going on. Thank you very much for the call.
Well, thank you.
Actually, if you right-click on the taskbar... in Windows 2000 and Windows XP, it gives you the option for the task manager.
I like the Control-Alt-Delete. It's always there for you. But you're right. Right-clicking task manager is what you want. All right. Dee Dee, when you first heard, as a child or so, that Lucas was planning on making three films prior to the trilogy that we all knew and loved, what was your first thought?
Oh, I got to totally be around for that.
Yeah,
I gotta be around for that, and I wanted. I was like, I'm probably not gonna be old enough to help out, but you know, I wanted to be part of the whole making universe, consuming, you know, pushing, prophesizing,
merchandising,
evangelizing.
Oh dear.
You looked at that and said, "What a great opportunity for me to be a consumer." Did this?
I need some of that.
Dee Dee, did this idea that new episodes of Star Wars were coming. Did that help you through the young suicidal teenage life?
Oh, of course.
Come on. Use the Force.
There were me and my little group of band geeks, because we were like a hearty trio of band geeks that faithfully went to the new releases into the theaters of the original trilogy, and so I had a support system, and Star Wars was part of it.
All right. This is Geek Speak. And my name is Lyle Troxell. This is KUSP that you're listening to. And the geeks this morning on Geek Speak are Sean Cleveland, Drew Meyer, and that was Dee Dee Hubbard. We are taking your calls and questions about technology. We're answering anything you'd like. If you'd like to talk about Star Wars, we're welcome to do so, or E3, gaming in general. But today, for the next 15 minutes, the phone lines are available. You're welcome to call in and ask us any technical questions you may be having. So here are the phone numbers. Get ready. 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. All right, now I expect that our producer is going to get slammed with phone calls. They are available at your disposal right now to ask questions, and if not, we're going to keep talking about Star Wars. So 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We'll answer anything you may want to throw at us.
Our lovely producer.
Your wife, the producer. Dee Dee, actually, no, we'll go back to Drew. So, Drew, this collection you say is not with you at your house. You're saying that you kind of fell out of the Star Wars.
I carry it with me everywhere, Lyle.
No. Well, you carry the names of characters. Yeah.
It's my brother and I have it. We don't really quite know what to do with it. We're proud of it. It brings us back to childhood. But I suppose we could put it on eBay, but there's something so callous and commercial about that we haven't. I don't know. Someday we'll be able to take it on tour around the country.
Lyle, what's your experience with Star Wars?
I've seen the films. I remember after episode one came out, I was kind of shocked and appalled and like, oh, it wasn't what I expected, blah, blah, blah. And then I started to realize that there's nothing that could be as good as what I expect because I grew up and went through those films. So there's such a level of nostalgia. I mean, just because those characters aren't even there. And I got to say that in all these new three films, anytime I see R2 or C-3PO, I'm like, ha, ha, ha. And I mean, there's some kind of connection I have with the films, definitely. And so, in any case, over the time, looking back at episode one and episode two, and then re-seeing them recently, they are amazing science fiction movies. They are, like, when you look at science fiction, space science fiction movies, you're talking about, like, Red Mars, and you're talking about some really bad movies. And so at least they're not that bad. The problem I have with them is that the actors who, you know, in other spaces are probably really good actors. You've even seen them. They just have a wooden quality in the Star Wars.
Yeah, Hayden Christensen in House Has a Life. Life Has a House, that's it. Was very good.
Yeah.
I was very impressed.
But it's something about, I think, Lucas's directing style that bleeds the life out of you. I think that's what it is.
It's just not very dynamic roles.
Well, a lot of the old stuff was actually based in reality instead of completely animated. And they had a lot of other people.
They had real sets to work in.
A lot more people in the creative process, including writing. I mean, I don't think Lucas came up with scruffy-looking Nerf Herder himself.
Great point.
You know, when an actor and a director work with each other, I have a lot of experience in theater. It is not the director's the boss of everything, controls everything to the minute detail. The director is kind of guiding the actors to bring their talent and their emotion and their being to the space. I feel that when you get to a point where the director's this god-level person and is controlling every little tiny detail, like even after the fact of the performance, you lose some of that core emotion of the character. I think that's what I have a problem with the most. All right, we're going to go to UCSC and talk to Electra. What's your question, Electra?
Hi.
Great name, by the way.
Oh, thank you very much. So I have a pretty basic question. I just got a Macintosh Tower without a keyboard or a screen, so I need to buy a screen.
Do you get like a G4 or G5?
A G4. Uh-huh. It's a used one.
Okay.
But when I go to look for a screen, do I need to find one that is specifically Mac compatible, or will any monitor work with either system? I mean, like Macintosh or PC.
You're basically, the monitor itself will work fine. The connector type is what you're looking for. the G4s either have a DVI or the, what's the Apple connector, the kind of weird
ADC.
ADC. If you've got an so this is, this, I'm going to throw acronyms at you that make no sense. If you go with, I think it's ADC, it's got, the back connector looks kind of like a large oval. The ends are very round.
Uh-huh.
If that's the kind of connector you have, you're in bad trouble. Most likely you don't. So there are three basic connector types. There's SVGA, or VGA is what we call it now. It has, it looks, well, it's kind of hard to describe. It's a DB25, I believe it is. two-row DB25.
Trapezoidal with lots of pointy metal things.
It's trapezoidal. It's about the width of a big thumb.
Okay.
The length of it, if you will. And that is a VGA. If you've got that connector, then you can buy any monitor and connect up to it. If you have a DVI, now a DVI looks like a, oh, it's kind of hard. Here's basically the thing. Look in the back of the machine. If you've got a long oval, that's the ADC connector, you got to buy an Apple monitor, or you got to buy a monitor and a $100 conversion box.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm looking at the back of it right now.
All right.
I know.
And your phone is going...
Yeah, I can hear it. I'm trying very hard as I get close.
See, that's called interference. It's coming from her computer.
Yeah, I might...
Except it's not on, so I don't know where it's coming from.
Sorry. Is that better?
Yeah, sure, go on.
So I'm looking at the back of it, and I actually... I can't even figure out which connector would go to the screen. It doesn't have any... Oh, sorry.
It's going to be... It's not a vertical one. It's horizontal.
Okay. Would it have any sort of icon next to it?
No. No, that would be too easy.
I see one that plugs in, and then... Well, okay.
Okay, here's
the deal. I see one that's horizontal.
Okay, what does it look like?
It looks like a rectangle with then a little something coming off about midway of the rectangle. Almost like a pyramid shape. Does that make any sense?
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
But I appreciate you trying to describe it.
Uh-huh.
Is it a trapezoid or a rectangle?
A rectangle.
Okay, I'd go that it's a DVI connector, or it's something else. But I'm going to say go ahead and buy a normal monitor. It's going to be a lot cheaper. But, you know, of course, the best thing you could do is get a. Do you have a digital camera?
Yeah.
Okay. Take a close-up picture of a few of the connectors on the back of it.
Uh-huh.
And then go into your a monitor place and go, what one is my monitor and what kind of monitor I need?
Oh,
and they'll
right.
tell you. And then when you get that information, you can either buy from them or you can go somewhere else and take that information with you.
Oh, yeah. That's great. Okay.
Good luck on that.
Thanks a lot.
You bet. If you've got access to email, you're welcome to email me, and I'll talk about your model number and everything.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
All right. Let's see. John from Salinas, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi.
Hi. What's Thank your question, you. John?
Yeah, I just have a curiosity between what operating system between Windows 98 and Windows Millennium would be better for offline games. You know, you load a game on, which ones run faster or better?
Windows XP.
Windows XP.
I know it's not one of the two you just mentioned, but...
No, that's a good answer, actually.
Windows Millennium, I've never really liked. How about anybody else?
Same. It's a dusted-off, brushed-up version of...
Bastard, stepford, child thing.
Oh, yeah.
The important thing, if you're running Windows 98, you don't need Millennium. You need Windows 98 2?
Service. Yeah, you need
SP2.
Second edition.
Yes. You got that?
I have that on one system and a Millennium on the other.
Go with the second edition. But the hardware is going to be the most important.
Yeah, a lot of people give up on Windows Millennium. It's got some real issues. You didn't really see it in OEM systems, manufacturing-built systems. They kind of stuck with Win98 Service, second edition.
John, what kind of game do you want to play?
Well, is there City of Heroes? And
yes.
Do you have a good graphics card?
Medium.
Mm-hmm. It's really the hardware of the machine. You want a lot of RAM, you want a fast hard drive, and you want a really good graphics card. So whatever system has better of that. Are you thinking about reinstalling the operating system on your better machine? Is that the thought?
Well, something like that.
Yeah. What you should do is just try playing the games you want to play on...
You can install
the Windows Millennium Edition. It should be fine.
But you know that that game is... I mean, the big, amazing part of that game is the online version. So you'll be wanting to play with lots of other people.
But I have to agree with Lyle. It's not so much the operating system that's the limiting factor here. It's not going to give you increased performance as much as the hardware will.
You might see more stability out of a certain operating system. That's what you'll see. Less crashes. When it comes down to it... When you're playing a game, you're not really doing as much with the operating system as you normally would do. But I would go with Windows 90. If you have it to go with 98, go with second edition. Millennium is basically 98 with a little bit of bells and whistles and a little bit more bugs. Go with that and then make sure your machine is, you know, the hardware is as strong as it can be. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Good luck, Sean.
Bye-bye.
All right, numbers are open again. 877-476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. We do got one more call we'll just go to right now. Marty, Santa Cruz, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hey, guys and gals. I'm not either a computer expert or a Star Wars expert, but I read a really interesting article yesterday that I thought you guys might find interesting, written by Alex Jones, talking about the whole Star Wars series and as it reflects upon the problem of fascism and its seeming concern with you know the whole thing between freedom and the control of big business or something.
Sure.
But anyway, I can't remember. It was either on somebody had like sent it to me. I think it's either from Infowars.com or maybe even Craigslist. But maybe you can Google Alex Jones and Star Wars or whatever. But it was kind of, I don't know, it's interesting. He was even talking about how, like, apparently there's police departments all over the country that are kind of designing Darth Vader type or Stormtrooper type, you know, outfits that will, you know, scare people when they send them out in the street and stuff. It's interesting.
Looks like PrisonPlanet.tv has got a couple of hits for that.
Oh, really? Yeah, maybe that's it.
It's the top link on Yahoo, by the way.
Yeah, Infowars.com.
Huh.
Interesting. There was a lot of... if you were politically minded or bent one way or the other, you could pick up a lot in the movies, it seemed like to me.
Yeah, I heard that Darth Vader says something like, either you're with me or you're with my enemies or something.
Yeah. Draws a very black and white line, and they discuss that the dark side sees everything in black and white, and the true Jedi sees things in shades.
Yeah, but that's almost a direct quote from George Bush. You're either with me or you're with the terrorists.
Yeah, there's been a lot of correlations to that. Lucas, of course, wrote these films a while ago, so there isn't actually a correlation in that.
Well, I don't think he wrote the script for this one, though.
No, he really didn't.
Yeah.
His defense on this issue has been that he wrote this plot, he wrote the script long ago enough that it has nothing to do with Bush, and that it has more correlations with Vietnam than with our current situations. Lucas is saying very strongly that, this is his claim, that it's life imitating art, not art imitating life.
Well, I'm sure he didn't want half the country screaming, you know, that they should boycott it.
Right.
Well, anyway, have a great day.
Thank you very much for the call.
All right, bye.
All right, some closing thoughts on Star Wars, D?
Why?
Why did you steal my childhood and destroy my soul? Is that what you're saying?
Why? Why?
You know what? We got one more question from Perry. So, Perry, go ahead and hit us up with your question for the day. Perry, hello?
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, I had a question. I've been looking for a new computer lately, and there's DDR2 RAM out.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys have any thoughts on that stuff?
Well, it's going to be specific to your board. Sean's our memory expert. Sean, what's up with DDR versus DDR2?
DDR memory is kind of pervasive now. That's what most systems are using. DDR2 is the next generation DDR memory. Runs at faster speed, 400 and 533 megahertz, as opposed to 333 and 400. It's got more pins, but it uses less power. So I think for notebooks, that sort of thing, DDR2 is kind of a good move. If you get some 915 Intel motherboards are now requiring DDR2, 925, these are chipsets from Intel. AMD is not supporting DDR2 yet, so if you get an AMD Athlon 64, you're going to stick with DDR memory.
So basically, the motherboard that you own is going to determine what memory you want to go with.
Right.
Is DDR2 backwards compatible? Can you get DDR2 memory and use a DDR board?
No.
In fact,
the pins the pins on the memory themselves have a gap. Right in the middle of the stick of memory, there's a gap there.
So the physical thing is actually
So it's actually moved, so they cannot physically be put into a DDR2. Will not fit in DDR and vice versa.
So totally different memory. Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
You know, that reminds me that DDR, there's a Mario DDR coming out soon.
Now, that's not the same thing as data rate.
Dance Dance Revolution.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
DDR, Dance Dance Revolution.
All right, we're coming up on the end of the show. I want to thank Dee Dee and the geeks. I'll do that in just a second. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. The Geeks This Morning, Sean Cleveland, Drew Meyer, and Dee Dee Hubbard from New York. Dee Dee, thank you very much for visiting us and participating in E3 and then telling us all about it. That was great. And I miss you, and I hope you move back to California at some point. Our producers, Maggie Cleveland, to all of you, thank you for participating in the show. And thank you all for listening to GeekSpeak. To those of you that called in, thank you for making GeekSpeak what it is. Without you, it would just be us geeking out. And who really wants to listen to that?
Hey, Lyle.
Yeah.
May the force be with you.
GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. Next week on GeekSpeak, we'll be back again at 10 a.m., as we are every Friday, to answer your questions and comments about technology, another show about your problems and concerns. So start saving them up for us. Coming up next is Open Road with Dean Monroe. And at 1 p.m., Two Steps in the Blues with Charlie Lang. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, Santa Cruz, KDBH, San Ardo, or on the web at kusp.org. For KUSP and GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. Stay tuned in just a moment for the Open Road. But first, a little bit of news from NPR.
NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Bush today said if Congress passes legislation that loosens restrictions on research that uses human embryos, he will veto.